There's a drive to deep center field. Hicks is back. It is gone. Salvador Perez has another home run since the All-Star break. Three home runs, eight driven in. That is his 16th of the year.
So Salvi hitting some home runs. That's the Royals' one offensive highlight from last night. Really is actually, that's an accurate description.
Yes.
The Royals lose to the Yankees 7-2, not helped by Adalberto Mondesi's two errors that led to four unearned runs. Jacob Junis takes the loss, goes 4 2/3, and he does have those four unearned runs that were hurt by the errors by Mondesi. Front office officials to the Royals have acknowledged privately that there would be growing pains for Mondesi, who's just 23. He turned 23 on Friday. And presumably is a shortstop of the future. Ned Yost said that youth had nothing to do with the mistakes. They're called errors. Veteran guys make them too. It's just not what young guys do. They're errors. So that's what happens when you play younger guys. You're going to go through some growing pains. I'm okay with that. I have no problem with Mondesi making some errors. He learns from it. Escobar made some errors when he was starting out. You make some errors, you get better as a player. I'd rather him have a chance to make errors and get better as a player than, you know, playing every fifth day and Escobar playing short.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no problem with that. I mean, I remember Escobar couldn't hit at the plate one lick, and he ended up being the ALCS MVP and hitting 15 straight postseason games. Remember that? And people are saying, why is Escobar hitting? Why do you let him hit? He's horrible. And Ned's like, well, at some point we're going to need him to hit, and this is the time to let him play it out and learn how to get better. Same thing with Mondesi. You got to live with this stuff. If you're going to be a fan and you're all riled up because Mondesi made a couple of errors last night, you're not seeing big picture.
No, not
at all. And what does it matter if the Royals win a few games here and there right now? It's not going to help them in the future.
No.
It's about, you know, getting the highest draft pick you can get, which hopefully you make the right choice, and so forth and so on. So the Royals, 31-71 now? 40 games. Wow, 40 games under 500. Brad Keller to the hill for the Royals. Second game of the four-game series in New York at 6:05 tonight. CC Sabathia on the hill for the Yankees. Keller has pitched very well since being a starter, so the Royals will be back to work in the Bronx tonight. Local sports, anything to add on that?
The K-18 State Baseball Tournament finished last night. Concordia CMB ended up with a 12-5 victory to win the championship for 2018. Full results and bracket are at nckssports.com. Also there at nckssports.com, you can find the rosters for the Shrine Bowl, which is coming up tomorrow night in Pittsburgh at Kearney Smith Stadium. And Darren Sass of Smith Center, one of the assistant coaches, and Dalton Kuhn of Smith Center will be playing in that game tomorrow. Kick off at 7 o'clock, the 45th annual Kansas Shrine Bowl there in Pittsburgh. So a couple other MCL players on the West team, Hayden Gillum of Plainville, and Kirk Kims of Phillipsburg. Again, full rosters are at nckssports.com, and they'll kick things off tomorrow night at 7 in Pittsburgh. So that's a look at what's going on with our local sports here. Summer baseball coming to a close for all of our area teams, and we'll have the Shrine Bowl, and then starting to get into some practices later next month for high school sports coming around the corner as well.
Yep, it is sneaking up on us, no question about it. Major League Baseball trades. The Yankees get richer, but they do have a pretty good farm system with their prospects, and if you're in it to win it. I tell you what, the Red Sox and Yankees are making a lot of moves like they usually do when they're competing against one another. But you know why they're so badly want to win the division? Because you don't want to play a one-game wild card.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't want to come down to that. And the Yankees got an ace in Severino. The Red Sox have an ace in Sale. So you would think you'd be all right in a one-game situation. But then again, in the playoffs, you usually get maxed out on pitches, and then it's a battle of the bullpens more often than not. So the Yankees, they pick up J.A. Happ, a very good pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Cubs have reportedly agreed to a Cole Hamels trade. Hamels with the Rangers. The Brewers are talking about a Matt Harvey deal. Harvey went from the Mets to the Reds earlier this year. And we'll see. Not a lot of talk in this article about any of the Royals right now. But those are the bigger names. Matt Harvey, who's not as good as he once was, of course, as Toby Keith would sing. What else we have here in regards to moves? Zach Wheeler, the Mets, could be dealt. The Nationals, who just traded for Kelvin Herrera not too long ago. Remember that? Royals got some prospects, although nothing super great. The Nationals now talking about selling here at the deadline. They're the favorite to maybe make the World Series out of the National League. Favorite in their division. Phillies and Braves are pulling away. The Nationals apparently have some chemistry issues. Scherzer and Strasburg got into it the other day. Strasburg's down on the DL. Harper is not having a very good year. And the Nationals preparing to sell. So Kelvin Herrera could be traded again. Well, it'll be interesting. Herrera has not pitched that well for the Nationals since going there from the Royals. What would be very interesting is what kind of haul did the Nationals get for Kelvin Herrera?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's better than what the Royals got, then the Royals screwed up.
Yeah, definitely.
Because this is closer to the deadline. A lot of people said, why didn't they wait a little bit longer? That'll be very interesting to see what happens. Former Royal Joaquin Soria. By the way, remember the Royals gave away a good player in their bullpen, Scott Alexander, just to unload Soria's contract. They gave away Scott Alexander to the Dodgers in a three-team trade. All Soria's done this year has been lights out as a bullpen closer. 16 saves, ERA .74.
Wow.
Maybe he just has better coaching. I don't know. But on the White Sox, of all people, Soria's been traded to the Brewers. So the Brewers add another good arm to their bullpen as they're trying to chase down the Cubs. And the Astros traded within their division. They got Martin Maldonado, who's an outstanding defensive catcher, as Brian McCann has been hurt and on the DL. So the Astros trade within division and traded a pretty good pitching prospect to get the catcher to help them. So it's not – we've seen some couple of things that are very rare. You've seen the Orioles that are so bad trade within division to the Yankees and give them Zach Britton for prospects. Now the Astros traded with the Angels to get an all-star catcher from a year ago who's outstanding defensively, throwing out 45% of would-be base stealers. You just don't see that very often.
And the Blue Jays traded Hap to the Yankees.
That's right. That's true. That's right.
It's just like,
Hap to the
why
Yankees.
Are the Orioles and Blue Jays helping out the Yankees? Like,
because
of all
they have
teams
no
to help in your division, though, it's like, why are you trading them to the Yankees?
Well, but you know, at the same time, you got to do what's best for your organization.
Well, yeah,
and
exactly.
If those are the teams giving you the best deal.
Exactly.
You got to consider it.
Yeah, you got. Yeah, I mean, if you're getting something that you like for your future, you got to take it, no matter who you're trading with. But it's just weird to see it.
It is that
the Yankees are the team they're helping.
It's not a regular thing, that's for sure.
My question is, in a parallel universe or whatever, what in the Robin Yount are the Brewers doing in a pennant race? When's the last time that happened?
That
wasn't too long.
Not very
they
long.
Made a wild card, but they really, was it not? Gosh, I don't think I'd seen them in the playoffs.
When they got CC Sabathia traded for him, they were in the playoffs.
Yeah, Ryan Braun was like the MVP that year.
What was it last year? Last year, they, missed by a game or two to make the playoffs last year? They were good last year.
I just couldn't remember the last time they were in the playoffs. I guess it was more recent than I thought.
Yeah, I can pull that up. But last year, they were very close, if I remember correctly. I'll pull it up here. Milwaukee Brewers playoff history, because a lot of people listening really want to know about the Brewers. 2011 was the last time they made the playoffs. That was 7 years ago. So I guess it depends on what you think as a long time ago.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot longer than that.
Yeah, I remember because they had CC Sabathia. They basically rented him, and they got him on the team. And then that was in 2008, actually, I believe it was. And then 2011, I think, that's when Greinke pitched for him, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Because Greinke pitched in the playoffs. It had to be 11.
Yeah.
It wasn't 08.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a few times here that they've been in the playoffs twice in the last 10 years. I saw this tweet, and I just flat out started laughing out loud. A Major League Baseball scout was watching the 29-73 Baltimore Orioles play baseball the other day, and the Major League Baseball scout quoted, this is what he said, "I watched the Baltimore Orioles for a couple of nights, and I was hoping I'd either get hit on the head by a foul ball or struck by lightning."
Wowzers!
All I gotta do is change the joke. "I watched the Kansas City Royals for a couple of nights, and I was hoping I'd either get hit on the head by a foul ball or struck by lightning." It applied to either one.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy. The Royals are so god-awful. They're still not the worst team in baseball. They picked the wrong year to tank. They still have the number 2 overall pick.
It's like even worse than the year they started 0-27 or whatever it was.
That was Baltimore. Baltimore Orioles started 0-26. Royals never started that.
What were we talking about, Baltimore?
Oh, okay. Baltimore. Yeah. I thought you said the Royals.
No.
Okay.
Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore. Yeah. Yeah, Baltimore's 0-26. Yeah.
Okay.
0-26. That's never been done since then. But these teams are pretty bad. So the race for the number 1 draft pick continues. The Chiefs had their first team practice yesterday. And, of course, all the talk is about Patrick Mahomes. And here's Andy Reid talking about day 1 of practice. This should be exhilarating.
You guys did a nice job with the testing this morning. It's a significant test, so you get a good idea and who's been conditioning with their time off here and who hasn't. And The guys, I was happy. The big guys are normally where your issues come in, and they cranked on it. So I appreciated the work that they put in. Came out today, this afternoon, we were able to knock the rust off a little bit, and we'll get going, do a little bit more tomorrow. Tomorrow's practice is a non-pad practice, but again, we'll get a lot of work in as we go.
All right, so that's day one. Patrick Mahomes had a 60-yard touchdown pass yesterday in first team practice to Sammy Watkins, who doesn't have the dreads anymore because he's grown up and matured, and he said, I don't see myself wearing dreads at the age of 40. Well, you could still wear them for another 10 years if you want. He's only 25. Apparently, he's cleaned up his act, whatever that means. So Mahomes was asked about living up to expectations yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that's the expectation. I mean, you win back-to-back AFC West championships. I mean, that's the next step. For me, you say those words, but you have to know every single day you come in, you have to grind. I mean, you have to work for that every single day. It's a long process, something that takes extra work, takes extra film study, and I believe guys are doing that, and we're going to carry that out throughout the season, hopefully win a lot of games, and hopefully get to that point. For me, every single day is a learning experience. Every single day I have to push myself to get better, and that's something that I love to do.
Reggie Ragland, linebacker of the Chiefs, some knee swelling, so there's your first injury concern. It's not anything that's major concern for the Chiefs. Everybody reported the camp. Everybody reported the camp on time. No holdouts, which is a good sign.
Yes.
Eric Berry is back. Well, they'll ease him into things, I'm sure. Mitch Morse back at center with the foot injury from last year. And certainly a big key to any successful sports season for any team is maintaining your health, which the Chiefs did get banged up in some spots last year. But as we were talking with Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest yesterday, he said, you know, the Chiefs are deeper than they were a year ago. And I agree with him. I mean, especially you just look at offensively. I mean, they're deeper at wide receiver. Tied in, Demetrius Harris can't catch a cold, so whatever they have behind Kelsey's okay with me. Spencer Ware now is your number two running back if he's fully recovered from the knee injury. That's better than Tre'Quendre West. Your offensive line, I think they have some decent depth. I don't think the offensive line is great, but I think it's decent. Mahomes, you got a backup of Chad Henne. He's a veteran that could easily handle things, as you said yesterday, in case things went south. He could hold down the fort, and you got a good running game with Kareem Hunt. The defense, I think you have a little bit more depth maybe at linebacker than you had before, more youth. Defensive line, they've got some depth there. Of course, that all pertains to whether or not you have injuries, whether that comes into a play. Secondary, I don't think they have a lot of depth. And one thing that stood out to me, what Matt Derrick said yesterday of ChiefsDigest.com, that caught me off guard, and that is he said Kendall Fuller is going to be lined up as a slot corner. So that means
they
David
said they did a lot of drills yesterday with him. They talked to Andy Reid after that about what's, you know, what are you putting him in the slot for? And he didn't say he was going to play in the slot.
Right.
There were quite a few drills apparently yesterday that they did with him in the slot.
Well, Matt Derrick said 90% of the stuff he's in the slot.
Yeah.
So it is not that he can't move to the perimeter on the edge, to the outside. But I thought all along he's going to be a number one or number two corner. And instead of talking being on a slot corner, well, I'm okay with that if you had Marcus Peters on the other side.
Yeah.
But now you've got David Amerson, who I saw last year get torched. He's going to be on an island. Are they going to play man-to-man press coverage? Because if they do, we're in trouble. And then on the other corner, Steven Nelson, who was absolutely just beaten like a rented goalie in a hockey game. I mean, he wasn't very good. And I keep hearing, well, he wasn't healthy. Well, odds are, late in the year, you're not going to be healthy no matter what. They've got to get this kid from, is it Carolina, the free agent, Breesland. They need to sign him. He came in for a visit. He was actually in a team meeting, believe it or not, but was not signed. And so he's talking to the Colts yesterday. He's talking to the Browns today. And the Chiefs have offered reportedly a one-year, $7, $8 million deal, a prove-it deal. And he would like a three-year, $24 million deal, which he had been offered by Carolina. Now, he's not a great defensive back. He's probably just as good as anything the Chiefs have, maybe a little better. Maybe not as good as Kendall Fuller. But they need depth in the secondary at corner. And I'm telling you, that's I know if they get a great pass rush, you don't have to cover for as long. But I am still really worried about Bob Sutton and his plan for this defense, because I can see Bob Sutton. I hear about, well, they're going to make changes. They're going to do this differently and this differently. Okay, that's fine. I'll believe it when I see it. Okay, so they make the changes, and then teams adjust to those changes. Now, is he going to counter-adjust? Because he's not very good at that.
Yeah.
And I know he wants to play man-to-man, which he had to play a lot of zone last year because he couldn't get a pass rush. It really starts up front. If they can't get a pass rush, this Chiefs defense is going to be picked apart. If this Chiefs defense cannot get pressure on the quarterback without blitzing, Dee Ford and Passanau and the Speaks kid they drafted and Justin Houston, if those guys don't pressure the quarterback, this Chiefs defense is going to be bad. And on top of that, they better be able to stop the run as well, which they were. They were 29th against the run last year.
Yeah.
They're going nowhere if they do that again. So, one, you got to stop the run. But then, if you stop the run, it works hand in hand. If you stop the run, you force teams into second and third down and long. Now you can pin your ears back and rush the quarterback. But when you're giving up 5-6 yards on first down, then all of a sudden it's a, hey, I can pass, I can run option, and the Chiefs aren't going to get to the quarterback. So, one, they got to fix the run defense. They got Xavier Williams, who is probably not as good as Benny Logan, but as Matthew Derrick said yesterday, Benny Logan was hurt for a good portion of the year. So Xavier Williams is probably, he makes it sound like it's a bit of an improvement. They got the naughty kid from Florida State that they like a lot, but how much can you expect from a rookie in the trenches?
Mm-hmm.
Usually rookies don't come in and dominate on the defensive line. It's a big adjustment, no matter how big you are. And then can Dee Ford stay healthy and actually put something together consistently? Because he's horrible against the run, by the way.
Yeah.
And then Justin Houston, will they actually let him rush the quarterback? I saw the statistic the other day that Justin Houston rushed the quarterback, I think, 72% of the time. He was in coverage 28% of the time, which is 28% too much, in my opinion. Von Miller, just in comparison, Von Miller of the Broncos rushed the quarterback 93% of the time last year. Why are you giving a guy all this money and putting him in coverage? Justin Houston needs to be rushing the quarterback at least 85 to 90% of the time, minimum. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that's what his skill set's built for.
Right. So if Bob Sutton is going to make adjustments on this defense and do things differently, to me it starts right there. The other thing is he's had Justin Houston line up on just one side, which is predictable. Just like Marcus Peters always lining up on one side, it is predictable. You can avoid him, just like you can avoid Justin Houston. So if you have Dee Ford always on the left defensive end or linebacker, outside linebacker, and you have Houston on the right side every time, where do you think teams are going to run the ball to?
Probably left. To the left side. They're going to run.
They'll run it towards
Ford.
They're
going to run right, but they're going to run to the Chiefs' left side.
Exactly. Yeah. So the talk is that the Chiefs are going to move Houston around. What a concept! We just now discovered you can move your best pass rusher to different spots on the field. You know Neil Smith and Derek Thomas did that. They flipped all the time. Sometimes Neil Smith would line up over the center, nose guard every once in a while. Hello? Football's just not been discovered yesterday. I'm like, really? You just now came up with that novel concept. Well, we're going to start moving Justin Houston around different spots on the field and look for some mismatches. Genius. Well, first of all, you better make sure he rushes the quarterback a lot more than he has been. Two, move him around. That way you don't know exactly where Dee Ford is. Now, granted, you could audible change the run to the left side. If Dee Ford is end up on the right defensive end position, you can shift the run. It was originally going right. You could shift it left with audible. I mean, you can make those adjustments on the fly. But it adds more to the other team trying to run their play. More communication. Maybe not everybody gets the audible call. Maybe they're not as good running to that side, even if Dee Ford is there. You make the offense have to guess a little bit. And that's the thing that defenses, I think, fail to do. I think defenses can be a little bit more creative because the offense always dictates things from the standpoint that you don't know what play's coming. Now, you might see the formation and go, oh, okay, we saw this on film. We know this is coming. But defensively, you've got to be really creative. And the best defenses in all of football over the years are defenses that were, one, different, unique, and creative. Well, it helps if you have studs. But you mixed it up. And the Chiefs are not good at mixing up defensively. At all.
No.
And that's why I have a huge problem with Bob Sutton. Now, I hope at the end of the season, the Chiefs defense is in the top 15. Because if the Chiefs are in the top 15 defensively, I think this offense is going to be top 10 easily if they stay healthy. Then this Chiefs team is a playoff team, if not a team to maybe go deeper in the playoffs than they have in the past. But Bob Sutton, I'm not confident that the problem is all about personnel. And I still don't like the fact that Marcus Peters was always on the same side of the field all the time. Whether that was Peters wasn't good enough or smart enough to play both sides, which I have a hard time believing that, why would you put your star player on one side and allow the other team to stay away from him? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, the good news is you don't have a stud corner anymore. So, hey, you mixed it up. Moving Emerson and Nelson around and Fuller, probably not going to be a big deal as it was when you had Peters. So, to me, the jury's still out on Bob Sutton. This is a make-it-prove-it year. If the defense of the Chiefs does not get, I mean, significantly better with the new personnel that he has, with younger players at linebacker, including Hitchens and Raglan, then Justin Houston doesn't have a really good year, although, honestly, if he gets hurt, that so be it. Sutton can't control that. This is on Bob Sutton. This defense doesn't have to be great. This defense just has to be decent for the Chiefs to do some really special
middle
things
of the pack
year.
In the NFL
yes.
was good enough with the offense.
I was going to say, if they're 15, 16, 17th in defense, I'd take that. That'd be okay. But you can't be in the bottom tier of defense again, because this is what Bob Sutton wanted. It was all Clark Hunt said it publicly. It's not we've figured out that it's not personnel, or it is personnel. It's not coaching. That's basically what he said, personnel. And so they got rid of some guys. They got rid of some age. They brought in some younger guys. Maybe the younger guys is what's going to solve what Bob Sutton wants to do. Typically, Bob Sutton wants to be super aggressive. He wants to rush the quarterback, put pressure on, be aggressive, blitz, and play press man-to-man coverage. Okay, if you get the right guys, you can run that system. He obviously couldn't do it last year. That's why he dropped 8 in coverage. Remember the first game against Patriots? He got nickel and dime to death because he knew he couldn't get anybody to the quarterback even when he blitzed. And he knew he didn't have the greatest corners in secondary with Eric Berry out. And he had Peters on one side, and he still couldn't stop anybody on the other side. So Bob Sutton and the Chiefs defense has to be more creative this year. Maybe they will with younger players, but I'll believe it. Like you always say, Dusty, I'll believe it when I see it. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm going to go.
I foresee a lot of zone coverage in your future.
If we don't rush the quarterback with regularity, with pressure, we will be in zone coverage because we'll get torched man-to-man.
That's not going to be good.
We'll be torched man-to-man if we can't get pressure on the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, David Amerson will be cut at midseason if that happens.
I mean, it's not rocket science what they needed to do in the offseason, especially once you traded Peters. Like,
right.
The whole point of getting Fuller for me would have been keep Peters and get those two guys on the field at the same time.
Right.
Talent-wise, you know, I'm not talking about all the other stuff, the baggage that comes with Peters, but talent-wise, you've immediately made your secondary way better if you make the trade for Fuller and keep Peters.
Right.
But not what they did. And so it was clear for me anyway, and I know that people like to look ahead and make sure you can fill in spots that might be vacated here soon in the draft.
Sure.
We have spots that are vacated right now at corner. And your first corner you took was in the fifth or sixth round. And it's like,
you haven't signed a free agent corner.
What are you doing?
Or Amerson, I guess you did.
Amerson.
Amerson's not
that really That's gets great. Everybody excited. Yeah. Let's go sign David Amerson. We're good at corner now. We got Amerson instead of Peters.
Well, you guys
we're good.
Excited about
I mean,
that.
I mean, it's obvious what you need to do, and then they didn't even do that. So
right.
I don't know. I'm confused at what they're doing. I'm really confused if they're actually going to put Fuller in the slot and keep him there. That didn't make any sense at all.
Right. Well, no, listening to you guys talk about what the Chiefs need to do, you know, I'm thinking about Denver, and I'm like on the other side of the coin. All the offense needs to do is be decent.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you take the Chiefs' offense, put it with the Broncos' defense, you got a Super Bowl contender
it's
without
over.
A question.
It might be over.
Yeah, exactly. It's Bashad, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, Breland. He played for the Redskins. He was with the Redskins. He planned to sign a deal with the Panthers, but his physical, he didn't pass his physical. It was going to be a three-year, $24 million deal. Now, since then, he's checked out, I guess, physically. He's healed up or whatever. So it doesn't sound like that's a problem for somebody to sign him. But right now he is still technically unsigned. Many people think he's still going to sign with the Chiefs. He's just seeing what's out there, and the Chiefs maybe could match it. Say, hey, whatever you find with Cleveland, Indianapolis, you want to be a part of a winner. We need some help in the secondary. We could maybe change our offer depending on what's out there for you. Otherwise, if this is the best offer, we'd love to have you come in and be part of the Chiefs organization. But they need help in the secondary.
Yeah.
The secondary scares me. I know Seren's been on the show before of 810 WHB, and he tells me pass rush is his number one concern. See, to me, I'm not there. To me, the biggest concern is the secondary, because let me clarify. If Dee Ford and Justin Houston are healthy, I'm not worried about the pass rush.
And if they're used right.
And used right. But obviously they hurt. That changes the whole complexion of the argument.
Yeah.
But I don't care if the secondary is healthy or not. I'm worried. See my point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm all in
show
on that. You'd be preaching to the choir if you talk any longer about that. Because I'm just like, yep, that's where I'm at.
Exactly. Okay, let's turn to UFC. You know, we talked about swimming the other day. This is the sports ticket. Let's talk about UFC. UFC star Conor McGregor avoids jail with a guilty plea. Remember his altercation in April with other fighters? He threw, what was it, a chair? What the heck did he throw? Broke out the window in the bus, and then fighters that he didn't like, a couple of them actually weren't able to fight the next fight because they were damaged by the glass cuts and whatever else. And one of the guys on that bus is a guy that McGregor is probably going to fight next. McGregor has not been in the ring in a UFC bout since before he fought Floyd Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been off for quite some time. He's 30 years old. But Conor McGregor, yesterday, he pled guilty. He had been facing 12 criminal charges related to the incident at Brooklyn's Barclays Center on April the 5th. So here's his punishment. He will not serve jail time. He faced one charge instead of 12. Part of his deal is he's required to undergo anger management treatment. The plea does not affect his U.S. work visa. And he has to fulfill 5 days of community service in exchange cleared of the criminal charges. If you or Chad or I did what Conor McGregor did, would that be our punishment?
No.
Not even close.
No.
Not even close. This is, once again, people that are popular or important or can make a lot of money for other people. He had been facing a 7-year jail sentence as convicted of all those counts, which I'm not saying. I'm not saying he even needed to go to jail, per se. I'm not even saying that. But 5 days of community service? I mean, make him. Can you make him, you know, give up a couple $1 million of charity or something? He did apparently pay for the damages on the bus. That was nice of him. I don't know if he paid for the medical bills for the people he hurt. You know, I actually was cheering for Conor McGregor beat Floyd Mayweather because Mayweather, he beats up women, which is just ridiculous. And that's not a man at all. And then there's Conor McGregor, who, from what I know, he doesn't beat up women, but he likes to beat up buses. Maybe too many punches to the head, perhaps, have kicked in.
I like the UFC guy has to take anger management classes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's funny, isn't it?
Wouldn't that be like every UFC guy has some kind of anger in them. They have to if they're doing that.
Connor, you need to not hit with so much power. You need to control your punches.
Ultimate Fighting Championship. Let's go take some anger management classes.
What's that going to do? Are you kidding me? Khabib is a guy that was on the bus that he's supposedly going to fight next. As soon as they announced the settlement for McGregor, Khabib said, Madison Square Garden, November 3rd. Odds are it'll be either October 6th in Vegas or December 30th, maybe in Vegas as well. There's a pretty public rivalry between the fighters. As I mentioned, he was on the bus, and that was part of the whole disagreement. And next thing you know, McGregor's throwing stuff at the bus and caused damage and hurt some people on the bus. And now he gets a slap on the wrist. So you know that's part of the thing, too. You can't put McGregor in jail. We got this big money fight coming up, man. And McGregor hasn't been in the ring since he fought Mayweather, so it's going to be gigantic no matter who he fights against. And this guy he's supposed to fight against is pretty good. So stay tuned. But McGregor gets a slap on the wrist. We all agree on that?
Pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, at least get some probation or something like that, you know?
And yeah, nothing like that whatsoever. Just, it was like, why even bother with the punishment, to be quite honest with you?
About dismiss it at that point.
Pretty much. Okay, Carmelo Anthony has been traded to the Hawks from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Then he'll be waived or traded, whatever they're going to do, however they're going to do this thing. Bottom line is Carmelo is not going to play for the Hawks. He's going to play for, supposedly, he's all but guaranteed to join the Houston Rocks in a quest for his first championship. How many playoff wins does Carmelo have? Not very many.
Definitely not enough.
No, not enough. So here's what Carmelo said. Now that he's no longer a part of the Oklahoma City Thunder, here's what Carmelo said, and I want to get Dusty's reaction to this. Here's what Carmelo says. At the end of the day, it wasn't a good fit in OKC. I think last year, and I haven't talked about this before, everything was just so rushed. Going to the team for media day and the day before training camp, them guys already had something in place, and then I come along in the 25th hour like, oh, bleep. Melo, just come on and join us. Like, you can figure it out since you've been around the game for a long time. That's why it was so inconsistent. At times, I had to figure it out on my own rather than somebody over there or people over there helping me. End of quote. You wonder why Carmelo Anthony is a cancer? You wonder why Carmelo Anthony doesn't win anything of substance? Okay, he won a college national championship in basketball. Okay, fine. He hasn't won jack squat in the NBA. He's done nothing other than score a lot, hog the ball. Okay, so Carmelo, maybe just once you could stand up and be a man and say, you know what? I just didn't play well. I will look to bounce back this year. Is this necessary? Sour grapes, sour apples. Sounds like a baby whining that, oh, I got in a little bit late, And then I just, and then I had to learn it all on my own because nobody would help me. Seriously.
Nobody had to help you learn how to hog the ball and shoot?
No.
That's what you do. Okay, you talking
about...
Well,
they needed to help him learn how not to hog the ball. That's the problem.
Yeah, you were talking about Carmelo in the playoffs?
It's brutal.
Here's a fun fact.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Carmelo Anthony has the worst winning percentage of any player in NBA history with at least 50 playoff games at 31%, 16-36.
There you go. And he hasn't even made the playoffs some years when he's on mountain teams. He made the Knicks worse.
As they say, the proof is in the pudding.
The Nuggets weren't great. There was one, I think they won, I think he's won one playoff series in his career. That was with the Nuggets one year. That was it.
Yeah.
That's it. Didn't even get out of first round. Didn't help OKC. OKC rallied and won games in that series. He was on the bench because he was a defensive liability. Now he wants to go to Houston, which, you know, Houston's great at defense. Houston got rid of Trevor Ariza. And they're going to bring in a Carmelo Anthony. I'm going to tell you right now, and if you're a Carmelo fan right now, you're not going to like to hear this comment. Trevor Ariza is a better all-around basketball player than Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, right now there's no question about it.
And they let him go for a one-year deal with the Suns, and now they're going to bring in Carmelo. I don't see how this is going to be a great deal. And he was a third wheel in OKC. He'll be the third wheel in Houston unless Paul gets hurt.
Yeah.
And Harden loves to hog the ball, and you know, not hog the ball, but he needs the ball in his hands. So does Paul. Yeah. Same thing in OKC with George and Westbrook. I guess the offense is a little bit different, maybe more free-flowing. Maybe Carmelo is going to be allowed to put his butt back to the basket and post up a lot more, and that's more of his game, instead of being a spot-up three-point shooter. But what does Houston really like to do? They predicated on what? Shooting threes.
Yeah.
That's not his game. So what are your thoughts on Carmelo's comments?
I'm excited about him going to Houston.
Me too, because it kills their chances. Me too, because it kills the Rockets' chances.
Exactly.
The Warriors got to be laughing their rear ends off right now, what's happened this summer. The Lakers got Michael Beasley, Caldwell Pope, Lance Stevenson, JaVale McGee. The Warriors got DeMarcus Cousins, and the Rockets got rid of Trevor Ariza, who was a big reason why the Warriors struggled with them because of his length and his defense, and they brought in Carmelo, who's a defensive liability. And, the Lakers got Rajon Rondo, which will cause problems for Lonzo Ball and then LaVar Ball down the line, too. So who got stronger in the West? I could say OKC got stronger by losing Carmelo.
Yeah.
Who's got stronger in the West?
Hey, if Dennis Schroeder actually comes in and plays,
that could be a good
OKC
move.
Definitely got better with getting rid of Carmelo.
You
no
could
question.
Argue OKC's done better than the Rockets have done and the Lakers. Well, granted, LeBron is a huge, you can't exclude LeBron. The Lakers haven't done anything very impressive. But the Warriors got to be laughing, aren't they? Like, we're worried about Carmelo.
The Warriors are going to be laughing to their fourth championship in 5 years is what they're going to be doing.
Stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly. As far as Carmelo is concerned, I love how he comes out and says this like that, like 25th hour I came in and had to learn everything and this and that. You remember his first press conference when he came to OKC? Somebody asked him about coming off the bench, and he's like, I just laughed it off. Yeah, like I'm going to ever come off the bench. Okay, so
then,
you can't come in here like that with that kind of attitude and say it's not your fault that you broke up the chemistry of it.
Right.
Like, they had their chemistry. I came in the 25th hour and then had to learn some things.
You don't hear LeBron say that.
You just came
out
and said
LeBron
you're starting
teams.
No matter what.
Yeah, right.
And just laughed off the idea of coming off the bench.
Yep.
And you're coming in here breaking up that chemistry.
Yep.
And then you're going to complain about it in the offseason that chemistry was broken up. We didn't gel. It didn't work out for me. No, it didn't work out for you because of you. It had nothing to do with the Thunder.
This was one of the most predictable things in sports, about as predictable as Charlie Weiss being a failure at KU as a football coach. This was easy to see.
As soon as he
went to the Thunder, I put all over social media, I go, what are the Thunder doing? They were better with George and Westbrook. They're going to be worse with Carmelo added to the mix. We talked about on this show, we're like, this is just not going to work. And I just don't know if it's going to work in Houston. Some people think it's going to work in Houston. I don't.
The only way it's going to work in Houston is if he does come off the bench and plays a very insignificant role.
Or he will start, but he's going to be the third option.
Yeah.
And then he's going to give up a lot of points because he's a defensive liability.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing with the Rockets, too. The last 2 years, they've given up defense for supposed offense. You look at Carmelo's numbers right now, it's not offense either.
Oh, no, he's not good offensively.
He's had the biggest decline of a player like that. They had some graphic the other day. I didn't look close at it, but his efficiency rating has just plummeted in the last 4 or 5 years. Every year it gets significantly worse.
Well, and like I said, even when he was good in his prime, there was only 1 year that they didn't lose in the first round of the playoffs that they ever made the playoffs, and that was in 2009 when they got beat in the Western Conference Finals by the Lakers.
Yeah. That's.
He's also 34. He has a lot of wear on the tires. And Carmelo in his career is averaged 24 points a game. He led the league 1 year in scoring. His points per game have gone from 29 to 27 to 24 to 22 to 22 to 16. His field goal percentage, by the way, you know the best field goal percentage he ever had was back when he was 23 at 49%. He's never shot 50% from the floor. And he's a post-up guy a lot, mid-range guy. His shooting percentage last year was 40%. Before that, it's not like he's a great player for the Knicks. With the Knicks, he shot, listen to this. With the Knicks, he shot 43%, 45%, 45%, 44%, 43%, 43%. That's not very good. Not very good at all. So, and we don't even have the defensive numbers here, which are not good. So Carmelo is being Carmelo, Melo being Melo, and good luck to the Rockets. They're going to need it. Another cancer in the NBA would be Dwight Howard. And Dwight Howard is now part of the Washington Wizards, so the Wizards might as well go ahead and tank because they're not going to do anything. Dwight Howard was asked about his Hall of Fame chances by TMZ Sports, to which he responded, "My resume speaks for itself." An 8-time All-NBA selection and 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, Howard didn't mince words about the critics of his Hall of Fame candidacy. He says, and I quote, "My resume speaks for itself. Of course I played for a couple of teams." A couple? And that's okay. But I think
a couple he didn't play for.
Yeah. But I think this will be my final destination, really. I can't really say about rankings. I really don't get into that. But like I said, I know what I've done in my NBA career. I think I've been pretty successful. A lot of times people are always going to hate, say something bad about who you are as a player and a person. That's really a testament to their character. It's not really anything dealing with me. Ask NBA, any NBA player, any person. We've all had downfalls, but I'm not really concerned with it. So he says, basically, I'm a Hall of Famer. My resume speaks for itself. Well, just like Carmelo, he has nice numbers. And I guess the Hall of Fame is based a lot on numbers. So based on numbers, he's probably right. Based on numbers, his resume does speak for itself, and that he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. But the only time that he's been a winner was with Orlando early in his career. And since then, everywhere he goes, things don't work out very well, and a lot of teams can't wait to get rid of him. Who's the problem? The team? All these teams the problem? Or is it Dwight Howard? Dwight Howard has gone from Orlando to the Lakers to Houston to Atlanta to Charlotte and now Washington. That's 6, and he says a couple. Last time I checked, couple is not 6. When you say married couple, unless you're talking about polygamy, as we talked about earlier, we're talking 2. We're not talking 6. So already, Dwight, you don't even know what you're talking about. Well, I played for a couple of teams. You've played for a couple of teams the last 2 years. Orlando, Lakers, Rockets, Hawks, Charlotte, and the last 3 teams you've played for, last 2, they couldn't wait to get rid of you. Oh, Dwight Howard's numbers 2 years ago with Atlanta, 14 points, 13 rebounds a game. Those are good numbers. They're not bad numbers at all. 63% from the floor. Horrible foul shooter, 53%. Last year, he averaged 17 points and 13 rebounds. That's really pretty good. 57% from the line, 55% from the floor. You got to ask yourself, if those are numbers you would really love to have on a team, wouldn't you? 17 and 12? Are you kidding me? Why is everybody in a hurry to get rid of him? Why would they possibly get rid of Dwight Howard? It's a chemistry issue? Maybe it's Dwight all about himself talking about himself? My resume speaks for itself. Me, I. That's why Carmelo and Dwight Howard have not been successful team players in their careers. All right? And I heard Carmelo, he won the gold medal, and he's a good player on the Olympic team. Huh, well, it's hard to screw that up.
Right. You're talking about the last 2 teams that had him couldn't wait to get rid of him, as if the Lakers before that were dying to keep him.
They couldn't wait to get rid of him either.
I remember when the Spurs played them in the first. They swept them or 1-5. I can't remember. But
it was bad.
Dwight Howard checked out. He was done.
He quit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing you need to know about these two guys that we've talked about, Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, the teams that are trading for them are just trading to dump salary.
Yes.
They're not trading to keep the player.
No.
They're not.
No.
He got traded to Brooklyn. Brooklyn's like, oh, we're just doing this to dump salary. You're gone.
Right.
See you later.
He's like, you're a bum. Waving you.
Carmelo, Atlanta.
Get out of here.
We could keep you, but nah, we're just dumping salary. You're gone. See you later.
Right.
Well, that's all you need to know about those two guys. There's not legit trade offers from any team to say, we want you, so we'll trade these people for you.
No, you're not hearing a whole bunch of, wow, there's seven teams interested in Dwight Howard. Like they are with Mike Moustakas, there's nine teams interested. Because Moose isn't a cancer. Man, that's just funny. My resume speaks for itself. You're right. How many rings do you have?
He said...
how many playoff victories you got? How many playoff series did you win? Oh, that's right. Not many.
I don't know if people saw this, but the other day somebody asked him what his goal was coming into his career. He's like, I wanted to be the opposite of Tim Duncan. That's why I picked number 12, because it's 2-1 flip backwards.
No, you succeeded
to be the opposite of Tim Duncan.
Not a team player.
With flying colors.
Not a winner, not a team player, and all about yourself. You're absolutely the opposite, Tim. Congratulations.
Succeeded.
Well done. All right. Have you guys played Fortnite?
No.
I've not played it. I've watched my cousins play it a lot.
I've seen my son. He plays it.
I haven't even seen it played. I've heard of it, and I guess people are addicted to it. So, I don't even know what it is.
We've got like a battle at our house to stop our kid from playing. You know, there's a certain amount of time we'll allow him to play it. Because if you allowed him to play it, he'd play it 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just kids. My kid's 12. Adults are caught and hooked up. Fortnite has made, what, $1.2 billion in revenue off of things you can buy within the game. The game's actually free.
Yeah.
It is free to play or to get. I mean, you got, in some cases, like Xbox, you have to have a gold membership or something like that. They've got ads and this and that, too. Well, if you think Fortnite is not that big a deal, or if you're sitting here and going, well, I don't play Fortnite, why do I care? Apparently, professional sports teams and franchises are worried about Fortnite. You heard the story that David Price missed a start because of what they called carpal tunnel syndrome, or his hands, his fingers, and all this.
Okay.
Everybody, it's widely, I don't know if it's a fact, but it's widely been written about that it's because he played too much Fortnite.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. It happening.
You can see that.
I think I might have got it from playing Double Dribble on the old Nintendo.
Yeah, right.
If I do this the right way, I can score 200 points in this game.
Right. Double Dribble.
but for instance, the National Hockey League, Scouting Combine, Riley Suter was in Buffalo for the NHL Scouting Combine. And the question at first surprised him. Maybe it was a joke. But as the Washington Capitals' eventual third-round draft pick shuttled from room to room, from interview to interview, teams repeated a question over and over, and it kind of intrigued him but unnerved him at the same time. The question was, are you addicted to Fortnite? That's the question.
Yeah.
One of the biggest questions they're asking is, are you addicted to Fortnite or any other video games? How much do you play video games? So you may sit here and go, well, what's the big deal? Well, what happens is, and I remember this in college, I did it, and I skipped classes because of it. You stay up late playing video games, then what happens? You're dead tired.
You're not functioning.
You're not functioning well. You stay up till 3 to play these games, and then you got to get up for a 9 or even a 10 o'clock class, and you wake up, and you're like, oh, God, no, I'm too tired, and you go back to bed. You drag. It affects your performance. These teams and organizations spend a lot of money on these players. They're called investments. These players are assets to the organization. So they want to get their best return on their investment, just like a stock if you bought it on a stock on a Wall Street stock exchange. So they're asking these questions. One agent who represents NBA players noted he heard concerns this past season of fatigued players from team personnel. Some believe some of those players were tired because they've been playing too much Fortnite. We're talking grown men, man. We're talking David Price is not a rookie. All right? This is very interesting. The fear of the Washington Capitals is that games such as Fortnite and other video games could erode a foundational practice of their developmental system, and that's called 8 to 10 hours of sleep per night. Believe it or not, a lot of these professional organizations have sleep clinics, or they talk about, you know, how important sleep is, or they have ways of making sure that they get on that type of schedule, and it's a really big stressful, I mean, it's a point that's really stressed. And that is, you need to get your rest. And that's why some teams are spending more money on charter planes, or like the Patriots, remember, they bought a couple of those. And guess what? Patriots are one of the best teams in the league year in and year out. Maybe there's something to it. Is that when you're tired, you're not as effective as you would be if you're fully rested. That applies to anything in life. So there is a big concern in professional sports, and it's continuing to grow. And they're hoping this is just a phenomenon with Fortnite, and it'll die off. But then there'll be some other game, you know that. But Fortnite's becoming such a big issue that even before they're drafting players, one of the draft questions to the players from organizational higher-ups is, are you addicted? Not asking if you play Fortnite. Are you addicted to Fortnite? Are you addicted to video games? That's one of the big questions. Isn't that crazy?
It is. it's gotten so big this day and age, too, that you probably kind of have to ask it.
Right.
I mean, when you were talking about you did it, I did it when I was in college. I'd stay up playing Madden or NCAA football with my buddies until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. We'd have tournaments going every now and then on NCAA football and stuff like that. And I did the same thing, but there's so many options now. It's not, you know, two or three games that you can get hooked on. It's, well, right now it's one game, and you can play it on all different platforms. Yep. It's not just like you.
Yeah.
All Xbox, you have is your Xbox. You
can play it on your PlayStation. Laptops, whatever.
My nephew has it on his phone.
Yeah, you can play on phone.
And it's
iPod.
Like,
my son does that.
Exactly, and it's like you can play this everywhere.
Yes.
So you can be out escaping, trying to escape your house here, not playing video games. You're still playing it on your phone or your iPod or whatever. So I think that's part of that problem too. Now why they have to ask those questions is because it's so easily accessible no matter what device you're on,
right?
Like, no matter, and that pertains to everything within technology right now.
Lucas Johansson, a first round pick by the Washington Capitals in 2016, called the question a little absurd when he heard about it, and he compared it to teams asking prospects whether they like playing sports or not. He says, and I quote, "It doesn't matter as long as they show up to work ready, right?" End of quote. I'll disagree to an extent. If I'm an employer and I pay you $10 million a year to play a sport and you're up all night playing video games and then I see your performance dip, I have a right as your employer to say, you need to cut down on the video games. Yeah. I have a right to ask you, are you addicted to Fortnite? So I disagree with him to an extent. Now, he has no problem cashing the check that he gets from his employer. So he's like, well, dude, I can live my life. I can do whatever I want. Well, that's fine. You can do whatever you want. But it's like, you can drink all you want, but if you come to work drunk and you're ineffective, guess what? That hurts your performance.
So, yeah.
So how's that any different?
Stay up bar till 3 and then come to practice at 9 in the morning.
It's like any other addiction.
You're garbage.
Whether it's you eat a whole bunch of candy and get out of shape, or you're addicted to going out partying all night long, you're addicted to the adult clubs, you're addicted to marijuana, you're addicted to any kind of drug, you're addicted to alcohol, you're addicted to drinking, you're addicted to video games. If it's preventing you from performing at your maximum level, or at least towards the maximum level, and you're coming to work and you're hungover, or in this case, you are sleep deprived, or whatever, or it affects you physically with your hands, like they've speculated with David Price, as an owner and as a GM of that organization, you have a right to ask the question. Now, the player can lie all they want about it, but you can think it's a little absurd, but this is, you're an investment of that organization. I would say it's absurd that these players get paid millions of dollars to play a game. But they don't think that's absurd, do they?
No.
But they think it's absurd to be asked a question like that. I don't think it's absurd at all. Video gaming is a huge industry. Now you've got actual live gaming competitions televised by Fox and ESPN. I'm like, why do people watch that? You're watching a TV screen of two guys that you don't know playing each other in Madden.
The NBA.
I'd rather go play Madden.
Yeah.
Myself.
The NBA this year came up with their own e-league.
Yes.
That they're like, they named the teams.
Right.
And had professional video game players start their own teams in an e-league.
Easy, man.
Sanctioned by the NBA. Like, they paid for it. They put it together. It's insane.
I messed up. I should have invented a really cool video game. I'd be rolling in it. Rolling in it. Then I could play it all night long. And not have to worry about reporting to work because I'd be rich. I'm rich. Rick James. No, don't go any further.
Touching that one.
There we go. Good job. 10:07 our time, 73 degrees. Have a great weekend.
It's like you stared me down like you thought I was going.
Have a great weekend, and please, please, please don't play too much Fortnite.